off the ball.
Rugby.
If you look at Mac in a 23, he could play 10 for you. He has played 10 in the past, he's played 15, can play on the wing. Mac's the sort of player that can kind of play anywhere in the centre. He's a footballer.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No! Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.
Hello, hello. Happy Thursday. Coming to you live from a very different looking studio. Well, not live really, because you'll be listening to this back. But
our new temporary home.
Yes, temporary. I'm here with Eve, as you can see. How are you finding the move, Eve?
It's, do you know what? It's a fancy new studio, but I miss our, you know, I miss the vibes of the studio upstairs.
Yeah, I do
upstairs.
Too. The coziness.
It'll be back soon. The coziness, yeah. Exactly.
Rachel isn't here this week, but she will be back next week, we hope. She's a busy bee. And if you're new here, this is Word on the Street, where basically every week we take a topic, something that's dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public and we find out what they think. But this week we've turned the tables a little bit. Someone from the public has actually come to us with a topic in mind, which we love. We ask everyone if you want to be like Amy, who you'll hear from later, and you want to get in touch and you have something you want us to talk about, there's so many ways you can do it. You can get in touch with us on Instagram at Off the Ball, TikTok, Twitter, any of them, or as always, you can WhatsApp us at 0879 180 180. That's it, right?
That's it.
So yes, please do. But she got in touch to basically request a little bit of a deep dive into a really important topic, which is the prevalence of ACL injuries in both genders, but especially amongst female athletes. Female athletes are 6 times, well, actually, it depends where you read, 6 to 8 times more likely to injure their ACL than an equivalent male athlete. So we basically, in this episode, we're going to chat to a variety of people. Both Eve and I, we kind of split up the interviews this week, and we're going to look at why females are more at risk, the recovery process they face, and a bunch of different things.
Yeah, and I love the mix of people we got. We got athletes from different sports. We got medical people, medical professionals. Because especially it was a topic I hadn't known a lot about.
No, me neither.
At all. I'd heard tell of, you know, that I knew that women were more likely to injure their ACLs, and you hear like such high profile athletes doing it. But in terms of kind of the nitty gritty of it, it was all new to me, and speaking to some of these people has been an incredible experience.
Yeah,
eye-opening.
So many. We've called this, by the way, it's episode 26, and we've called it the ACL epidemic, because it actually is an epidemic. Across so many sports, women are experiencing this. So many injuries, specifically the ACL, across so many different sports. And it is, as you said, like, I knew about it, but I didn't realise the kind of extent and the brevity of it until we started to dig a little bit this week.
Especially with the kind of lack of research that has become so apparent.
Yes.
When doing our own research into this topic and then talking to, you know, professionals who are saying, you know, we're working towards getting more research, but there's just so little compared to the, say, the male side of things to back up what they're doing to make sure that, yeah, listen, the rehabilitation process is probably pretty similar for both, but in terms of preventative measures and in terms of where we're going in the future, there's a lot of work to be done. And thankfully, I think the tides are changing and more people are becoming aware of it and are investing their time and money into looking into this.
Absolutely. Sure, you chat to Professor Brian Devitt later, who's done a bit of study into this, but even he admits that, you know, 75% of his subjects that he was looking into were male.
Yeah.
Now, he is working on a female-only study.
So Brian Devitt from UPMC, he has just published in the last couple of months a very significant study into GAA, was speaking to me and said that there are going to be, along with some colleagues from the US and Australia, more female-focused, their kind of next study that they're doing.
Yeah, amazing. So you will be hearing from him. You'll also be hearing from Dr. Neil Welch in this podcast, who kind of also has done a lot of research and looking into this topic specifically. We've got Amy Gibbons coming up later, just around kind of awareness around the issue and what needs to be done. But we're going to start with Aveen O'Reilly, who is a Women's Rugby World Cup participant, if that's the right word. She plays for the Irish rugby team. She's participated in both sevens, or represented in both sevens and 15s. And incredibly, she has done both her ACLs. So not just one, but both on different legs, and she's come through it. And she says she's the better athlete for it now, but we kind of just chat to her about the journey, what she went through, and her experience. So here's Aveen up first.
So it's my first one. I was just like contracted maybe a year and a bit in sevens, and then like that summer in sevens training, I literally just did my ACL in training, and I'd only ever seen like one or two people do it before, but I knew like straight away from like how it happened. I was literally just stepping that it was definitely ACL, because everyone talks about like the popping noise, and it's just such a weird sensation. I just knew straight away that I'd done it. By the time I got back, I had missed that year of sevens and Six Nations. So I got back just as the off season started, played my first game of Interpro since like a very long time. And then I actually fractured my tibia in that game on the same knee I had done my ACL in. And the physio was saying like, I should have done my ACL in that as well. The way like the breakdown came on top of me, and like my leg like hyperextended. So my ACL was good, but then my tibia fractured. So I was pretty much rehabbing up until we had like our WXV3 in Dubai.
Okay.
So then got back into the swing of things there, played those games, went back into sevens like for the Olympic build up, and then it was like the last World Series in Madrid. Like I felt like I was finally getting the flow of things. Like I felt like I was in the mix in both sevens and 15s, and like hoping to go to the Olympics. And then did my ACL the second day of the sevens tournament, and it was similar. Like it was a non-contact ACL, stepping out of the line. I was in defense that time though, so I didn't even have a ball in my hand when it happened, but I knew straight away, and it was my other knee. That was it. Then I was just like, Olympic dream over. And I had only kind of envisioned myself doing sevens until the Olympics, because I'm not a typical sevens player, but I really wanted to like go to the Olympics, and like, because I had spent so long in the program. But yeah, as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna set my eyes on the World Cup. And then I had an unbelievable physio, Ed Mias, in the RFU for my rehab, and I was up and running so quickly. I actually feel like a better athlete after doing both my knees. Like I'm much faster, much stronger. It's actually, in a weird way, it's like kind of made me better, but obviously I've missed out on so much as well, so it's kind of like two sides of it to it, I suppose.
Was there more done by the time you did the second one that helped? I mean, it obviously didn't help you avoid doing it, but in terms of that rehab, or was it just the individual physio was completely different?
I'm not sure. Like I remember when I did my second one, I was like sitting in Santry, like just about to meet the surgeon, and I saw this like poster up on the wall, and it was like 20% of people who do their ACL will do the other one within like a year, and that was literally me. I was like, oh Jesus. I think it's like a combination of things. Like definitely females are more likely, and then also if you have like lax joints, you're way more likely to do it.
Okay.
But I don't know, like I remember when I did it, like the doc was like, oh, it was kind of not inevitable, but he was like, you had like a higher chance of doing it because you obviously move a certain way and your joints are lax. Like this one's good, but like your other one was kind of, you know, like I don't know if I could have prevented it. Like it probably would have happened eventually. But
when you did it, did you know much about it? Like
When I did mine, not really, because I suppose I was only like new in the like professional environment. So I wasn't like clued into like players getting injured and that sort of thing, but I have like read up a lot on it since like both my injuries, and it seems that like it's like there's not enough research to match with like at the scale of how fast it's growing, that like you can see like with men when they're in like school, like they're doing S&C like at rugby. Whereas like that's not necessarily there for women, and it definitely wasn't when I was, you know, 15, 16. So I don't know if that would have something to do with prevention later in life, but Yeah, definitely the lack of research around it. Like, I think that's why we don't know a lot about it, because like the game is developing and so are we as athletes, but it's like the research isn't keeping up with our development. But yeah, I definitely, the first time around, I definitely didn't know much about ACLs at all. Like, I think I saw two girls do it in training, but outside of that, I didn't realize how popular it happened, like not popular, but how frequent it happened in GA and soccer as well.
Having done both of them, I know you think it's just the way you move, but would you like to see, like, say World Rugby put research into it?
I definitely think like every organization should be like putting money into not just ACLs, but like any female athlete like study that's going. Because like I studied health and performance science in college, and finding research and studies that were in paper, that papers with, that were on female athletes, was literally impossible. Mm. It was so hard. There's just none. Like, and it's not just, especially in rugby, because I try to do a lot of them on rugby, but like a lot, there's more in soccer than there is in rugby, but yeah, it's just mad, like how little research there is. So yeah, it would be cool to see one on knees, because there'd definitely be a lot of subjects.
Yeah, it's, she's dead right. I mean, the soccer players are really who I would have more familiarity with.
Mm, there's been more news about them as well.
Definitely. I mean, if you look in the WSL, so the Women's Soccer League over in the UK, from 2022 to 2024, like multiple high-level athletes did their ACL. So Beth Mead, she ruptured her ACL in November 22 and then missed the 2023 Women's World Cup 11 months out. Leah Williamson ruptured... I know, well, just wait. Leah Williamson ruptured her ACL in April 23, again missed the World Cup and was out for 9 months. And then Sam Kerr from Australia, probably, despite the fact that she plays for Chelsea, one of my favourite female footballers. I'm obsessed with her. I think she's fantastic. She ruptured her ACL in January 24 and she didn't return until September 25. Jeez. 20 months out of action.
Why? What made her recovery so long?
She basically, there was an extended rehabilitation because there was a problem with the original surgical graft.
Oh,
so
God.
She nearly had two recoveries from this ACL injury. So what we're seeing is that within, you know, the elite level of female soccer in the UK, you know, the level of their process, of their rehab is, you know, they have the best doctors in the world, but they're still facing 9 to 20 months out. And there's so many of them every year.
Yeah, what was the crazy statistic that something like 30 players that could have been in contention for the World Cup
were missing because of ACL injuries? That's nearly an entire squad for a country.
Yeah.
You could have a country just full of ACL ruptured athletes.
When you hear things like that, it is eye-opening. But it's funny, yeah, in the rugby, it feels like it's less reported on to this stage.
Mm.
Like, we definitely know it's happening, but it hasn't been across the news, I feel like, as much as it has in the soccer.
Was it Fiona Hayes you were talking to about a mad thing that happened?
So Fiona Hayes, she's often on Off the Ball, but she is the coach in Old Belvedere. She was telling us last weekend when her team were playing, two players did their ACL within 6 minutes of each other.
I can't even imagine what that feels like for a team.
Oh, gosh,
know?
It's insane. But what was interesting is listening to Avi, and she talked a lot about the rehab, and they have so many incredible physios and teams in the IRFU that help them get back as quickly as possible. Mm. And she was saying that, like, from the difference between her first and her second one, you know, everything was quicker. She felt a lot better. So that's fantastic. But it's interesting that what seems to be less looked into in the rugby at the moment, and she spoke about that a little bit, is kind of the preventative measures that will stop you from getting an ACL injury in the first place.
Yes.
I know in the soccer, like you were talking about, they have a program called FIFA 11 Plus.
Yes, I hadn't heard of before. This
week. So it's really interesting. It's basically a warm-up exercise that they want females between the ages of 13 and 18 to do twice a week. So you have to do it regularly for it to be impactful. And it's a certain way of, you know, warming up your body so that the muscles around your knee protect your knee better, so that you're less likely to injure your ACL during a game. And apparently, according to this website, it has been shown to substantially reduce major injuries by up to 50% for females between the ages of 13 and 18. Now, I think that's quite a small sample size, but it does show the possibility, I suppose, for preventative measures to be in place.
Exactly. And I feel like as we get more research is being done, and as women's sport becomes more accepted worldwide, publicised worldwide, and more young girls are seeing sport as a viable career option, or are just more girls are playing it for fun.
Mm.
We're going to get more research into this, and hopefully for the next generation of young female athletes, there will be these measures in place as a commonplace thing, as like the bare minimum.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. And as more of those kind of measures prove to be successful with the research that we haven't had yet, there's only going to be more research, feel. Like, if you're looking at this going, wow, that worked, then it's kind of, okay, what's next? What else can work?
Mm-hmm.
But I had a really incredible chat with Dr. Neil Welch this morning, who is a PhD. He has a PhD in applied biomechanics. He is the football lead strength and conditioning coach with Kildare Football, and he's a specialist rehab strength and conditioning coach. So he kind of... He's really interested in this area, and he does a lot of focus around it. He worked with UPMC for years, so saw loads of kind of ACL injuries. And it's interesting because there's what little research has been done so far does focus on, okay, we know that between 13 and 18, girls go through kind of changes, and Neil will kind of dive into this in depth. How can we kind of not stop those changes, but prevent them from changing the female body in a way that puts you at risk of an ACL injury?
There's so little studies done into the effect of puberty on female athletes, young teenage athletes, girls, because for so long boys and men have been the default for studying. Even something like, you know, football boots were, you know, for women were designed on based on male designs. So yeah, as you said, it's very little research, but it's being done, and it's people like him who are very interested in it.
Yeah, well, what's particularly interesting is that not only does he talk about what can be done at that age group, but also, like, I don't think it's in the audio you're going to hear, but he kind of said, you know, it's not too late for the 18-year-olds who just happened to fall out of this bracket. It's not like, oh, too bad. Yeah. You know, if you're over 18, there's nothing we can do. You're just going to get an ACL injury. So he's really interesting in terms of, for the likes of Aveen, who, as she talks about, had those kind of flex joints, so as more susceptible to an ACL injury, what can be put in place and what athletes like that can be doing to stop the risk, or to reduce, not stop the risk, because it's never going to be foolproof, but to reduce the risk of getting an injury, even once you're an adult and fully into your career. So yeah, an incredible chat with him. So you're going to get about 6 to 7 minutes of me chatting to Dr. Neil Welch, and we'll be back after that.
The differences between boys and girls when they go through puberty that predispose female athletes to being at higher risk. So when you look at the biomechanics or the way somebody moves in prepubescent athletes, so 12-year-old boys and girls, they all move in similar movement patterns. And by that I mean that's that classic kind of knock-kneed movement that you see during a jump.
Mm.
And it's that kind of force or movement going through the knee that creates the load on the ACL that causes it to rupture. So when you get boys and girls, prepubescent, they all kind of look the same. Now when they go through puberty, boys undergo what's called a neuromuscular growth spurt. So they naturally improve at that movement. So that essentially when you look at them, when they're sort of 16, 17, the knees are straighter. So there's less of that rotational force going through the knee joints. With female athletes, that doesn't occur, not without intervention. So you have a natural, what you call kind of neuromuscular predisposition to risky positions within female athletes. In general, and again, there's a lot, this is kind of sweeping generalizations, there's spectrums of this, but there tends to be more what you call joint laxity in female athletes. So they're just more mobile, and there would be more tendency towards hypermobile athletes, for example. And this is another factor that's generally seen in female athletes is when they go through adolescence, is they tend to move towards those type of risky movement patterns for whatever reason. So I think if you spend a lot of time coaching this stuff, and that's I guess kind of my background, so like applied biomechanics and change direction, and I think you can change the way athletes default to when they go to change direction to sidestep. And if you can kind of lower their center of mass a bit, so they strike when they strike the ground, the knee is in a more flexed position, slightly more bent, same with the hip, then I think you can massively reduce risk.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And can that be coached at a adult age? Because I feel like a lot of the intervention for this is like we need to hit girls when they're kind of 13 to 18 to help them when they go through that changes that you detailed kind of at the beginning. But in terms of teaching people to sidestep differently, like, is that something you could introduce when they're already adults and when they're already kind of fully in their career as athletes?
Yeah, definitely. I work with Kildare. I look after the Kildare men's football team, and that's a big part of the way I see my role in there is trying to improve the way they move, sidestep, one, to reduce risk, but two, to try and make them more effective at it. What it needs is, like, it needs to be an important theme in the way you design your training, both in the gym, your explosive work, your on-pitch warm-ups. It doesn't happen by accident. You need to be quite direct, educating the players around those positions, and then you need reps.
Yeah.
So loads and loads of repetitions, and we spend a lot of time in our on-pitch warm-ups setting up particular scenarios. Rugby players' ACL injuries tend to happen more frequently in kind of a one-on-one attacking sidestep. That's where the greatest frequency of injuries occurs. So, like, if you took your players who were in those scenarios more frequently, back three, maybe all your backs, maybe back row, props don't tend to sidestep too much, and one, you could screen them, so some of them might be safe because naturally fall into a certain pattern. Some of them might not be, or would be less safe, in which case then you can target that group and say, we're going to bring you out for one-on-one work. It's going to be part of your warm-up 2, 3, 4 times a week, and we're going to rep this out, and we're going to try and make you safer. A lot of this is education. And if you can deliver a program and a series of messages to athletes that say, look, this is a way of moving that is risky, and this is a way of moving that is less risky. Because we would kind of coach the athletes within those sessions, give them the feedback on the way they move, and say, here's a couple of drills, feel the difference between the two. And oftentimes that's all it takes. And then it's just about following a program religiously over a block of time. And that might be enough to say, catch, 10-15% of people and reduce their risk and prevent an injury. Then if you were layering up, you might have some testing in order to be able to do the same thing, to, again, give more education. I think sometimes if you are aware that you're at risk, then maybe you're more likely to kind of action that. The layer above that might be having somebody in to coach this stuff. And then you have kind of coach education as well. So the people who are delivering this stuff, a GAA club is going to be parents. So you're trying to, it's very difficult to try and put this kind of technical, quite technical coaching in the hands of people who are volunteers and just want to kind of rock up. But I think you can put together programs that they can put in place with the teams that they work with, again, as a bit of a catch-all to try and prevent this stuff.
I'm very glad that he mentioned the GAA, because I spoke yesterday to Professor Brian Devitt of UPMC as well. And he did a really comprehensive study, only recently published in September or October of this year, on ACL injuries in Gaelic games.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, 73% of his pool were male, so Gaelic footballers, and then hurlers, but then the rest were female footballers and camogie players. But he was kind of looking at the return from injury and kind of how it is really high in Gaelic football.
Yeah, well, that's I didn't know that from Dr. Neil as well. He told me that because it's such a 360 sport.
Yes.
And you're running at all angles and at high speed, it's like the perfect storm for an ACL injury.
You're more likely to get an ACL injury playing Gaelic games, but also you're very likely to return, I guess, is the good news from his survey. But what I was particularly interested in is his take on, like, the science behind it, the reasoning why, kind of building on what Neil said, of how and why female athletes are more susceptible, and then also mitigation factors as well, specifically within the GAA, but as well which can be taken for any sport. So with a thank you to Professor Davitt for talking to us, here's what he had to say.
One of the things we want to look at specifically was the Gaelic Games sports and the rate of ACL injuries that we have, and also how our players do following ACL reconstruction. What we see is, unfortunately, we don't have a really good surveillance as to what is the prevalence of ACL injuries within our Gaelic Games players. But what we have is a very concentrated cohort of players, both male and female, and how they do after ACL reconstruction and their return to sport rates and also the re-injury rates that we see in that group. So that's what our publication was on. And what we saw is that our players, particularly male and female, get back to sport at a very high rate, which is, shows a level of success with the surgery, but also have a relatively low re-injury rate following reconstruction. But there are certain groups that kind of jump out that we have to be a little bit cautious about, and how we choose to fix the ACL as well, which graph we use is really important.
All right. And I suppose briefly moving away from GAA specifically, there's several statistics around the place, but I think the most common one seems to be that women are around 6 times more likely to tear their ACLs than male athletes. And people kind of bring out several different reasons, like the menstrual cycle or the joint itself. Is there an agreed upon reason why this would be the case, or is it still lots of different factors playing into it?
Yeah, it's unfortunately there's an awful lot of different kind of co-variables they speak about that, you know, there's definitely, there have been reports that have looked at the menstrual cycle. Those people think that it's more common at different phases of the cycle, and then other groups have suggested it's not the case. Definitely there seems to be this female skeleton is different. The hips are broader compared to males, and relative to the knees. So the angle that when women are landing for jumping, there's more of a possible stress through the ACL. So there's a huge number of variables. None have been shown to be the one risk factor in isolation. It's probably a combination of all of them. The one thing we recognise that why we believe the rates are high in Ireland is that, you know, the sports we play is also a consideration, in that they're field-based sports and they're changing direction. So we consider them what we call level one sports. So there's a lot of cutting, jumping, landing, twisting. They're trying to avoid opponents as well. So that adds another area of jeopardy that they have to, you know, get out of the way quickly. And there's a ball that's played above the head. So putting that all together, it does create an environment where the risk is very high. We're currently involved in a study to try to elucidate this further. We're doing a study with colleagues in the US and up north in the north of Ireland. We're looking for funding to explore all of these factors in just a female population. So hopefully we'll have some further answers in the future on that. But as it stands, there's no definitive one reason why female athletes are more at risk.
And then I suppose, finally, just from a sort of preventative angle, are there ways of training, or are there things that athletes can be doing to try and prevent injuring or rupturing an ACL?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is where I think we're really possibly not optimizing our training to the extent where we should. That there are warm-up drills that should be initiated at the beginning of every training and every kind of match-based scenario, that have been proven to reduce the risk of ACL injury by up to 50%. So these are really very valuable training methods. And if you look across all of our sporting organisations, the Gaelic Games and rugby, they have Gaelic has Gaelic 15, and rugby has a warm-up strategy that they have well documented online that is really effective. And it's just certain movements that you can do with the ball in your hand. But part of the difficulty we've had is that the uptake of that is that there's limited time for coaches, and then spending time on this stuff, they don't really focus on it so much. So I think we really need to advocate as parents when we're looking after kids or looking after GAA teams or coaches that to focus on the warm-up, because it not only reduces your risk of ACL injury, but improves performance as well and increases robustness, which is the key in terms of continuing to play sport.
Okay, well, speaking of coaches in the GAA and people advocating for more research and different kind of methods of reducing the risk, you sat down with Amy Gibbons earlier, who, Amy is the one who started this all, so a massive shout out to Amy for getting in touch with us and bringing to light this incredibly important topic, to be honest.
Yes, now Amy Gibbons, she plays club Gaelic in Dublin, and she has done her ACL three times.
She beat Aveen.
She's only 24. She beat Aveen in the competition. She's only 24 as well.
Fingers touch wood that neither of them do any more ACL injuries.
Yeah, no, she has her surgery coming up in January, so we wish her the best of luck. Mm. And Amy is involved obviously now with the coaching setup and also with kind of being a fitness trainer, and having ruptured her ACL on three separate occasions, she speaks to us about really about the mental aspect of recovery and rehabilitation and how important it is to give a platform and to advocate for female athletes who are going through a very long and lonely process. Mm. She has her Instagram, which she uses to kind of showcase this rehabilitation process, and has got, you know, messages and questions from loads of girls, like young girls, who are struggling with the same thing that she is going through. So she talks to us about, yeah, the mental effects, kind of the community of the GAA and what this all means to her. So we thank Amy very
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
Very excited for you to listen to her. It's about 20 minutes long. So she was very good. Come in to us in studio. Our first ever in studio guest.
Yes. Thank you, Amy.
So, yeah, listen. And it's what happens when, you know, we bring the conversation back into the studio. Conversation that counts. The biggest conversation in sports. So we're very excited to bring you Amy Gibbons here.
I've been a Gaelic footballer my whole life, and then over the last couple of years I got more involved in the fitness industry around training and Gaelic football in particular, and I decided to make my own page called AG Fitness on Instagram and on TikTok and YouTube, and started posting content on there revolving around Gaelic football and fitness. And I sort of just automatically, unintentionally went into a niche of, you know, posting videos for more female athletes in particular. I felt like it was something that was really lacked in social media, and I started posting content from there. And yeah, ever since then I've been posting, and yeah, going through my own journey and stuff like that as well. I've had three ACL injuries now over the last 4 years, and I started posting more regularly about that. And yeah, getting into contact with Rachel, I suppose, just came sort of about over the last couple of weeks when I've only, unfortunately, did my ACL for the third time. So I just sort of wanted to use my own platform to maybe voice my own personal experience, seeing, you know, if more research can be done for such a massive surge within ACL injuries with ladies Gaelic footballers in particular in Ireland as well.
So tell us a little bit about the three separate occasions that you've injured your ACL, and was it all in the same knee or both of them?
No, so I did my first one when I was 19, and at that time it was during COVID. I was so foreign to fitness, training, even knowledge, own education. So that time was a brand new experience for me, and I think for me it was probably one of my own or my first personal experiences with rejection, and, you know, having to deal with overcoming something for the first time as it was a brand new experience for me. But I sort of took that stage as an opportunity, you know, to put my head down, focus on something that I haven't ever done before. And that was the only reason I got into the fitness industry in the first place. I got back playing then after a year. We had a really successful year with our club.
And what club is that?
O'Dwyer's in Balbriggan in Dublin. And yeah, had a really successful year. And yeah, I was really happy with how I was playing and stuff. Came back the following year then when I was 21, and I ended up doing my right knee then for the second time. And obviously, you know, the second time, you know the road, you know the experience, you know what's sort of ahead of you. So I think the second time was a little bit more mentally challenging, more so than physically challenging. I understood the journey. I knew what was to come, but only reflecting back after the second one, they were like two completely different people going really? Through each stage. Yes, it was the same body. It was opposite knees. But, you know, I felt like a completely different person going through that stage. Learned so much more about myself and the mental side of the game, more so than the physical side of the game. And again, looking back now, you know, it's probably a bit weird to say, but I'm thankful that they both happened, because I probably wouldn't have had the opportunities outside of sport if I didn't do it. And then, yeah, going back 5 weeks ago, I ended up going back and tearing the first knee I did for, so my left knee, for the third time. And it was our last game of the season. And yeah, I think this time it's been definitely physically, but most definitely mentally challenging, more so than anything else, knowing that you've done it twice before, but also thinking in your own head as well, I can't believe this has genuinely happened again. When you do tear your ACL once, there's a likelihood that you will probably maybe tear it again or the opposing leg, but it's not quite often that you hear many people or athletes or anybody in particular tearing it for a third time. So yeah, this time around it's definitely been more of a tough one to take, but I think with the approach I want to take with this one is, you know, learning, of course, educating myself about the physical side of getting back to playing and getting your body to where it needs to be again. But then on the other hand, now tapping more into the mental aspect of, you know, how that can affect me and how it is affecting me and how I can maybe give my opinion of how my experience has been to other people that maybe are experiencing the same thing as well.
So it's interesting that despite the fact you've gone through this process now a few times, you still find the mental challenges more difficult to overcome than the physical ones. I suppose it's every time you injure your ACL, perhaps the physical symptoms and the rehabilitation is possibly pretty similar. And then it's a different, because you're a different person, I suppose, at different ages that you do your ACL. So it's a very much a mental injury too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the side of an injury like this that's so neglected and not spoken about so often. Like, when you've been brought up your whole life playing sport, for me, you know, from the age of 7 playing GAA, being involved with my club, being involved with Dublin underage setups as well, and that becomes part of you. It's part of your identity. And that's all you really know when you're seen as that individual, you know, around that plays GAA and has such a love and a passion for sport. And when something like that out of your control is, you know, taken away from you in a split second, you know, so many emotions come into play. You're dealt with like a sense of grief in a way, because you can't go back to what you love to do for a prolonged period of time. And yeah, you lose yourself, and it can be quite a lonely place at times. It can, you know, you can fall into so many traps of, you know, anxiety, feeling really, really low at times. And yeah, it can be quite more of a mental challenge more than a physical challenge, because you're fighting a battle with your own head. And I feel like you need to give yourself that time to maybe grieve what you've lost in some sense, and really accept it, but try not to suppress it. And that's something that I definitely did myself the first and second time, with maybe being subconsciously unaware of the mental side of things and all these new emotions that were coming up for me. But this time now, I think I'm a lot more open to speaking to other people of how it does feel to do something so impactful like this, and the impact that it has on you mentally, but also physically. Because if your mind's not in a good place, the body will follow. And if the body's not feeling good, the mind's going to eventually catch up with that as well, you know?
Yeah. And so obviously we saw kind of your Instagram and the posts that you make about your coaching, your playing, and then also now your recovery from your ACL injury. What made you decide to kind of document this process online?
I think going back to maybe things I would have mentioned a couple of moments ago is, I wish maybe when I was going through my first ACL injury that I had maybe something online that I could not compare myself to, but understand, and knowing that I'm not the only person in this position. And I feel like it's maybe a job or a duty to me now in some sense that, okay, yeah, it's quite bad that this has happened to me, but I'd be a bit silly not to document my journey and let other people know that, you know, it's okay to feel bad. It's okay if you have a setback. And let people know what a journey looks like in that sense, because people don't see what you're doing behind the scenes. People just see you face to face in a 5 to 10 minute conversation, but they don't genuinely see the hard work that you're putting in behind the scenes. And if I can document my journey, my personal experience behind what I'm doing to become a better version of myself or get back to playing on the pitch in the near future, that would probably be my main goal. And to just really help people, I think is probably one of my more core values in life as well.
Have you had people who have suffered from ACL injuries kind of reaching out to you because of your platform?
Yeah, and to be fair, I think this time around I've been overwhelmed and blown away by the abundance of DMs and messages I've received off everybody, not even just in a GAA field, but rugby and soccer as well, that, you know, have done their ACL and they're looking for advice. And it's funny to say that they're never really looking for advice on the physical side of things, because if you have a good S&C coach there or a physio there, you know what you're doing. But it's more so the mental side of things that people are struggling with. So I'd be, as a coach, silly not to maybe give people my opinion on how they can maybe use small tools from what I've experienced that may help them along the way.
What would be kind of a small piece of advice that you'd give for someone who has just suffered an ACL injury, will be out for 8 or 9 or 10 months, to try and over kind of get through that time as best they can?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question as well. And I think it's, you know, accepting time, you know, and not rushing things and really being patient with the journey and not setting yourself a goal of what you want to achieve in 5, 6, 7 months time, but really just bringing it back to basics and taking it day by day, if not week by week, whatever that might be. And really just knowing and accepting that this has happened now. You can't change what's happened. The only thing you can do is, you know, react to what you've done in a positive light and just accept that some days are going to be bad, some days are going to be good, and you just need to ride the wave essentially out. But you will overcome it, and, you know, whatever journey you're going on throughout your ACL injury, you'll be thankful that it's happened afterwards. But you don't see that in the moment, but when you reflect back in a couple of years time, you will be genuinely thankful that it's happened.
Exactly. And I suppose, just maybe finally to wrap it up, we've been looking a lot, and we can hear it on the podcast version when this comes out later on today, about how do we prevent from an early age, or not even prevent, but work to try and reduce the risk of you know, ACL injuries. And there's been a lot of research, not enough, but a lot of research done into, you know, the difference in the female bodies, perhaps the menstrual cycle, muscle laxity, all these different combinations. But a specific piece of advice that keeps coming up from medical professionals is, you know, you need to be doing specific warm-ups and you need to be kind of doing these measures consistently from a very young age. Do you think that because the GAA is a voluntary organisation, so the coaches are often just parents, does it need to be like nearly a top-down measure from the GAA?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that's something that needs to be heavily evaluated within the LGFA, the GAA in particular. Funding, most definitely, I think, needs to be put as a priority to underage setup. So, you know, hiring and employing an S&C coach to clubs that are able to come in to an under-12s, under-13s, under-14s setup and coach, especially females, because the anatomy is so different with males to females, of how we can move our body appropriately, how we can put the right systems there into play. So by the time they then get to an adult level, they're able to have more control of their body. They understand what way their body moves. They've more of a strength background within their own body. And again, I think just more research and more vocalization to the point of the impact of, as well, of how menstruation and the female menstrual cycle has such a huge part to play in injuries along women. And something that I've been looking into even myself is, you know, females are more than likely more prone to injury during ovulation of their menstrual cycle. Essentially, you know, like going from an ACL perspective, there's more laxity within all tendons and within all fibres there, which encourages the body to be more prone to injury. So it's about monitoring that, evaluating that and working around that. But again, there's so little research there that we're literally touching, I think, off the surface and just literally off what people have experienced themselves. So I think most definitely more research, more funding, has to be done, even alongside the financial side of things as well. Like, you know, I've heard of girls and also boys as well that have had to get loans off family members, off credit unions, off banks or whatever, just to fund an ACL reconstruction or another operation. Because I think an ACL reconstruction in Ireland is between 7,000 to 900 grand, which is huge. And when you're hitting an injury like that, that happens so suddenly, you don't have a lot of time to prepare and gather that money. So that's obviously a massive financial burden on individuals as well. Obviously, providing the fact that if you don't have health insurance or anything. And I think for myself, like over the last 3 years now, or not 3 years, 4 years, should I say, across three knees, I could put a deposit on a house with the amount of money that I've put into bottom of my knees, just because I want to get back to playing a sport that I love that isn't even played to a professional level, but we all carry ourselves as professional athletes.
Best of luck with the operation coming up. Hope everything goes well. And thank you so much for chatting to us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah. Appreciate it.
No bother. It's been very informative. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Alrighty, well, that has been pretty much it for this podcast. We hope you enjoyed something a little bit different, but equally as informative, I think, as our usual pods. Just a quick line for me. Basically, if you've been curious about this topic and if you've made it all the way to the end of the pod, then I hope you are.
And you're my favourite listeners you have.
Exactly. Then, and if you want to learn more about it and kind of know where you can, especially if you're an athlete who's maybe gone through this or worried about going through it, Dr. Neil Welch, he has an Instagram page called @mybodystrong, and he's putting work over the next year into this topic and into finding out more about it. And he kind of posts updates on his Instagram all the time. So that's a great place to go follow him, kind of keep on top of the latest information. And yeah, I'm sure Amy as well.
She does.
On Instagram?
AG.fitness _. That's Amy's Instagram. And her documenting her rehabilitation and recovery. It's even if you're not someone who is doing kind of this sort of rehab, even just watching her journey is really
tugs
incredible
at the
to
heartstrings.
See. It does, you know, and we wish her the best of luck.
Absolutely. Okay, for now, this has been Word on the Street, and we can't wait to chat to you next week.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah.
I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.